Hey, everybody, this is Tanya Nayak, and you're listening to The Break. Today, my guest is Chris Meyer. He not only owns the podcast network Mudhouse Media that I am so lucky to be a part of, but the history of this guy is pretty remarkable. He has made some of the most iconic movies of our time, quite frankly. Me, Myself, and Irene, Something About Mary, Shallow Hal, Fever Pitch, The Do-Over. He's worked closely with the Farrelly brothers. It's pretty amazing to hear his story. So we both have roots in Boston, and I think there's something about the water that we drink, the dirty water in Boston, that it bonds people. And from the moment I had my first conversation with Chris, he's just a solid, salt-of-the-earth guy. And everything he does comes with hard work and perseverance. And that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to bring him onto this podcast, which, by the way, he had a big hand in helping me figure out what this podcast was going to be about. We were talking about icebreakers and conversations, and he said, you know what, Tanya, one of the best icebreakers I have found is that when you're talking to someone and you ask them what their big break was, he said, people could talk for hours. And I said, that's it. That's what this podcast is going to be about. So I'm excited for you to hear this conversation with one of the most interesting guys I've ever met, Chris Meyer. He is an Emmy-nominated producer. He's a visionary. It is like his superpower. And I'm just so excited for you guys to hear all of the wonderful things that he's worked on and hopefully gain a little bit of insight on, you know, when things don't always go your way, how to persevere and push through and just see how awesome life can turn out. Take a listen. How are you?
Tanya Nayak. I'm pretty well. It's even better now. We're chatting.
I know. I like this platform we're using where I can actually see your face, which, by the way, looks really lean. What are you doing?
I love any age. I wouldn't want to be 25 again. I'm happy where I'm at and where I hopefully will go.
Nice.
I love it because, you know, just jokingly and tongue in cheek, I play basketball a couple days a week, and I play with guys, you know, more than half my age, right? Younger.
Yeah.
And some my age, but, you know, a couple of years ago, one of the kids asked me how old I was, and I told him I was 60. And he said,
no, you didn't.
He said, you're 60? I said, oh, man, you better keep up if you want to look like me in 30 years. So just only a couple, last week, you know, I once in a while I pull off a good move, and I'll do my little dance. It's like, guys, hey, man, I got 30 years on you, man. You got to step it up to catch up.
Well, you're a far cry from 60. I like that approach, though.
I get them all thinking. I also ask them before we start, depending on how early it is in the day. Usually we play nights, but sometimes in the mornings and the weekends. And the younger kids aren't used to getting up early on a weekend.
Right.
So I asked
them. Neither was I.
I always ask them how many fireball shots and what time did you get in last night? And then I just take off because I always feel like I have an advantage already.
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, you just said something where you said, I'm happy where I'm at right now and where I'm going, which I love that. I think that's so amazing. And that is something I think that really does come with
maturity.
Age, doesn't it? Did you always feel like that? Like growing up, you know, to reach that point, to be able to say, I'm happy with where I'm at. When do you think that ever happened in your life?
Probably, you know, in the last 5 years. You know, I think like, you know, your 20s are tough, right? Your 20s kicks the shit out of you. I mean, you're trying to figure out who you are, where you're going, who you want to be with, what do you want to do? And then you slowly start figuring it out. And then in the 30s, you start settling in. You know, you start, you know, somewhat, I mean, I don't know if I'm quite an adult yet, but at least a high-level adolescent, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, then you get into your 30s, and hopefully in your 40s, you start, I think at that point, you've somewhat, you know, come to peace with yourself on who you are as a human being, and then hopefully going in the direction you want to go. I mean, from a personal level versus professional, you know, there's two different roads to take there.
Looking at your life, and I know you've been interviewed a lot and people have talked to you a lot because you are really a part of our history, you know, with some of these movies that you've been involved with and produced, like Something About Mary, Shallow Hal, like all of these movies that are just the most iconic that are going down in history with I don't think a day goes by when I'm not hearing a line recited from one of these movies, you know?
No, it's a beautiful thing. You know, and that's a gift I tell a lot of folks that especially, and I learned that from the Farrelly brothers. When I first got to Hollywood, you know, my opinion was was a little bit more stoic, you know, and we want to make Shawshank, and, you know, and then when I started working with Peter and Bobby, I had this newfound respect for comedy. You know, and I think comedies to produce and create a film in a comedy that's successful is a gift. Mm-hmm. And it's very unique, and it because everyone has their own sense of humor around the world, and to hit the masses is quite unique. And you know, just like today, we've had this kind of mantra, if you would, throughout our careers within the comedy world, that you know, life is tough enough.
Right.
Let's try to make the world laugh, and that you know that needs we need that more now than ever. Obviously, over the last couple of years.
It's getting harder and harder these days to make the world laugh. I feel bad for stand-up comics because it's like you so quickly become a part of a cancel culture if you say something in the wrong tone or the wrong way or, you know, and of course, I respect all of the movements, but it's tough to be able to just be funny and just, you know, be raw.
Yeah, raw. And we need to laugh at each other, you know, and with each other. I mean, laughter is one of the greatest things in the world.
Yeah. Well, so here you're a Boston kid. You grew up here. You're born here. Your family has roots, deeply rooted here. And you're suddenly in Hollywood making the biggest movies of our lifetime. So like, how does that happen, if you will? I mean, I think that is actually probably what I would imagine what was your big break in order to get to that point.
It's very interesting. You know, you always say suddenly, right? Well, then, you know, like yourself, you've been on television for 10 years, you know, and people don't know how long you've been grinding it out and working it out and sacrificing, you know, especially when you take a different path, professional path, which is at times risky, you know, and it's not your typical, you know, day job, which makes it that much more risky, right? And at the time, the job market in the early 90s was not good.
Right.
And I was scheduled to go to law school, which didn't happen, obviously. And, you know, I call it, you know, I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do and where I was going. And at the time, I was a movie buff and film buff. I'd go to Kendall Square and Coolidge Corner and all the local movie art houses. I'd go to the Harvard Silent Film Festival. I never thought you could make a living at it, you know. And, you know, the first kid in the family to go to college. And my kid, my folks had me when they were teenagers. Can't imagine what that was like and how long
it
took.
I didn't know that.
So I ended up going to Los Angeles and, you know, just showing up with no money and no network and going to make movies, Ma. My dad's like, Jesus Christ, what about you? See you in 6 months. You know, and I grew up when I moved to Los Angeles. I grew up.
Yeah, but the move to that, like, I feel like we just had a big gap right there, right? So you were going to law school and all of a sudden you're moving to Los Angeles. Why?
5 out of 6 of my roommates in college are attorneys. And I just didn't want to go to law school to go to law school. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have the passion for it. I just thought, you know, everyone's getting out of school. What am I going to, you know, I'll go to law school, get my, and I didn't even know what an MBA was. I probably would have got my MBA instead of my law degree. But actually, my mom said it. She said, Chris, you love the movies. Why don't you try to get in the movie business? And I said, Mom, how do you...
What was it after... Was it a conversation you had? Were you like, Ma, I just don't know if I can do this?
I was struggling. I was kind of like floundering. You know, I call it my angry young man stage. I just broken up with my first girlfriend. I got out of college. There's no job market. I was just, where am I? Like, you know, and she said, why don't you love... Do something you love or you like. At least try. And I said... She said, you love them going to the movies and everything about movies. Why don't you try to get in the movie business? And I said, how do you do that, Mom?
Yeah.
And I called the Massachusetts film office and I worked on a BU grad student film for 6 weeks. And I came home, I worked an hour and a half from my house and, you know, for free for 6 weeks, 18 hour days, the whole nine. And I came home and my dad said, what do you think? I said, Dad, I love it. He's like, what? He said, you work hard, you get paid for it. You're losing money.
I love that everything your dad says is like it sounds like he's yelling.
Yeah. your student loans are kicking in. I'm like, I know, but I'm going to. I worked in Massachusetts for about a year. There was no tax credit at the time. And I said, if I really want to give it a shot, I'm young enough, I need to go. And I need to make, I call it the big move when I talk to kids at film festivals or schools. And I call it the big move. I think it's one of the biggest decisions you'll make in your life. whether you have resources or not, that you're moving, you know, 3,000 miles from everything you know and love for an if.
Right. And you mentioned the Mass Film Department, right?
Yep, film office.
But to me, that's like, that sounds to me like the key that opened the door, because I don't think a lot of people even know that. Like, I never knew that.
You know, it's funny. I didn't even think about that. That would be, if you thought about it, my first break where I was introduced to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my feet wet on a 6-week independent film, student film. And then from there, I got a commercial job and gig that lasted about a year. And then I realized if I really want to make movies, I need to move. And that's when I made the big move. I tell the kids, there is no, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to say yes to everything. And you'll get there if you want. And you need perseverance, because, as you know, it's a long haul. You know, unless you get fairly lucky. Some folks get lucky right out of the gate. They sell a script right out of the gate, get their first acting gig out of the gate. But the majority of us, you know, it's you got to be in it for the marathon and the long run, you know, and just stick with it, because it eventually will happen.
If you stick with it, and that's where your sights are set on.
Yes.
And it's not all over the place. I think a lot of times people have different ideas, like, I'm going to do a little of this and a little of that. But you are focused. Like, you, at this point, you went to law school?
No, I never made it. I never made it to law school. Yeah, I never made it. I threw caution to the wind and moved to Los Angeles. And then you learn to survive and grow up once you get to a place where you have no knowledge of the city or the people there or anything else. And you start working.
You become very vulnerable quickly. Yeah. Had you ever really traveled much before moving to LA?
No.
Or was this like a really big trip for you?
Yeah. I mean, I'd traveled, but I mean, with my folks, and we'd gone on family vacations and things, but nothing like that, you know, where I said, I'm going to be leaving on my birthday, Mom, you know, and I drove out. And
you did the drive.
I did the drive. And then I ended up in Venice, California, and I met everybody playing basketball, believe it or not. And
nice.
And then one of the gentleman who got me, if you would, my first job there is, he was at a hot dog stand. And he had the name of this club on his hat that everyone said, Chris, we should go. It was a blues club. It was called 14 Below. It was on 14th and Santa Monica. I'll never forget it. And this gentleman at a hot dog stand had the name of the club on his hat. And I said, hey, man, do you work there? He said, yeah. I said, I desperately need a job. I started, you know, just kind of explaining to him who I was a little bit, so he understood who I was. And halfway through, he said, you play basketball on the beach. I said, yeah. Then he said, do you want to bounce? I'm like, ooh, okay. I needed a job. So I ended up bouncing. And luckily it wasn't, you know, this.
You were a bouncer.
Yeah, it wasn't your typical, it was more of a lounge, you know, and live music place than like a true nightclub, if you would, back, you know. I ended up bouncing there and bartending and bar backing. And that's when I met the Farrelly brothers. They would come in here. They knew Todd, the owner, who became my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we just hit it off, coming from the same part of town, same sense of humor. And I'd been out there about 5 years, and I was just about to pack it in. You know, everybody back east is getting, you know, their lives going and buying houses and getting married, and life seems to be progressing. And, you know, I'm in some bunker in LA somewhere just trying to pay my rent. And
so this is a, I went to LA, cut to 5 years later. So you're.
I loaded planes at LAX for a while. I was PAing. I was doing everything to try it again, but at the same time, pay my rent. I was just about to say, you know what? I always had this true thought that as long as I gave it a true valiant effort, you know, it was okay going home, because I'd still be young enough, you know, and I wasn't, you know, just surfing for 5 years out in Malibu, which would have been fun too, but I was trying to get something down there, you know? And I hadn't been home in quite a while. And I had two folks, my grandparents, pass within like a month of each other. And I was like, you know what? I think it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the bar owner, who became my friend, that I think I'm going to pack it in and I got to go home and start living again, kind of thing. You know, and again, everyone goes through it from around the world that shows up there. And he must have, you know, talked to Pete and Bob, and I got a call from them out of the blue one day. I said, Chris, it's Pete and Bob. What are you doing? I said, what's that, a joke? I said, I'm curled up in the fetal position in the closet watching the light bulb burn. I'm down 62 pounds. I told the loan guy I died. I told the credit card guy I died. I don't know if I should, you know, throw myself in front of the bus or
what?
They're like, is it that bad? I'm like, it's not that good. And they said, we're starting up on a new movie. We'd love to have you come on board and come with us. I said,
wow.
When do we leave? What do you need me to do? You know, and
hello, big break number two. Yeah, that was, and actually the
that
big
was the
break
big break.
Right there.
And I jokingly date myself, but I tell everybody I was Malcolm Butler that year from the Patriots. You know, and the beauty of that that year, and a lot of folks don't know this, but in 1998, Something About Mary came out. Good Will Hunting.
Mm-hmm. Which was your first, yes. Right?
Yes.
Something. Yeah.
Good Will Hunting and L.A. Confidential.
Amazing.
Three of the biggest box office and critically acclaimed movies of that year, all from Mass filmmakers.
Yes.
So pretty interesting.
Go
tells you a little bit about where we're from.
That is.
And then from there, we got a development deal with the success of Something About Mary. And we had a development deal with 20th Century Fox for many, many years. And then we went on an incredible run of, you know, almost 15, 20 years of movies and TV and traveling the world. It was just, it's been an incredible run. And I've been incredibly lucky and grateful.
Yes. And that's the key, gratitude always. But when they hired you for Something About Mary, what did they hire you as?
I started as their assistant.
As their assistant.
Yeah, as the director's assistant.
Amazing, so, because you really can't get better experience than being the assistant to someone like the director.
Yeah. And I tell a lot of the kids I speak to, I did it a couple times over the weekend. The beauty of being the director's assistant and or producer's assistant is you learn the entire game.
Yes.
So if you're only in the editorial department, you deal with editorial. But as the director's assistant, you cover everything from script coverage to studio execs to the actors to the cinematographer to you touch every aspect of the film from beginning to end, and you have to answer all those calls for your boss. And it
and you have access to ask any question you want.
And it's a great place to learn quickly and then go for that ride with them where you're just there by, you know, and learning by osmosis. And then after that, you know, then you got to continue to work hard, and then you move up to associate producer to co-producer to producer to partner. And we still work with each other. We work independent of each other. You know, we're still very much friends.
So you worked with them for a bunch of years, made all these hit movies, but then you went home.
Yeah, I decided to relocate a little bit, wanted to get a little bit closer to my folks and family, which I'd been on the road for, you know, almost 20 years. And luckily, I'm still able to continue to do what we do. We just wrapped on a movie in Colombia, in Bogota, called Quicksand. Yeah, and we got lucky that, you know, our lead actress, her name is Carolina Gaitan. She just won the Oscar for Encanto and sang, you know, the famous song from Encanto called Bruno at the Oscars. So it was a nice icing on the cake for us. We obviously, thanks to you, we're all working with the podcast network and continue to make movies.
One thing that I have to say about you that is so remarkable, and I don't know if this is just a Boston thing or if this is just to the core who you are, but you're one of the most humble, generous people I've ever met. And just from hello, like from our first conversation that you and I had, we were connected through Chappie, Kevin Chapman. And we got on the phone and it was immediate, instant. We talked for a couple of hours, I think. And you just seem to find time for everybody. And with everything you have going on, you're sitting here telling me that you just finished a movie. You're speaking on the weekends. You're playing basketball, you know, with the kids. And you're doing all these things. And you have a family of your own, you know. But you have this podcast network that you started. And I know you're doing something with space, right? May 6th.
Oh, yeah. Where'd you
debris. I mean, like... I do my homework. I do my homework, you know, and it's just wild because, well, I want you to tell me about all of it, but it's, I don't know how you find the time.
Well, thank you, by the way, Tanya, and likewise, and back at you with your, the success of your career. And again, thank the variety of things you've done, which is, and that's the beauty of life, right? Where we've been able to experience a lot of different things, a lot of different people. And then that ends up kind of coming full circle from the start of the conversation with, you know, it helps you settle, you know, in your own life.
Yeah, but let's be honest. There's a lot of people in this industry that are not, that are a little bit of like dicks, to be honest, you know. There's a lot of people out there with big egos and you have the credentials to be that person that wears that hat, but you don't.
Yeah, I mean, just like your folks, that comes from our parents. Mm-hmm. And I think the way you were raised, you don't need to be as complex as you think you are. I don't think you need to puff your chest out in anything you do. You know, everything else will follow as long as you just treat people with respect and kindness and your fellow man. You'll get that from us in return. And it's that simple.
It is that simple. A lot of people don't really buy into, you know, there's a lot of people, again, in the industry particularly, but not just in the industry. And it's disheartening sometimes. It's ugly. Mm. It's gross. You know, when you see that. But you've worked with a lot of actors and a lot of people that I'm sure have fit that profile and then have also fit the other side of it. So did you feel like you learned something from working with all of those amazing actors?
Oh, absolutely. Even the good and the bad. You know, and I feel for those folks, right, that are so insecure, you know, in their themselves, that something else is going up in their head and their heart that is disrespecting, is disrespectful. I don't understand it, because if anything, it's a privilege, not a right, to be in the positions we are, especially in this business. There's a few things when people ask me things, and I say, well, one of the first things is I can't believe I went out there and it actually happened, you know, because most of the time it doesn't, right? And it happened. I got a little bit of a nugget of it, you know, but the second thing is, and the third is, the second one is the amount of experiences I've been able to share with everybody in my life that would never have imagined what some of those experiences could have been or would be or will be, you know, and I've been able to share that with my family and friends and continue to do so, because it's just, we do some incredible things in our business that most people don't do in a lifetime, you know, and then the eclectic, diverse group of people. I might not have met you if I wasn't in this business. You know, I would not have met a lot of my friends who are in this business or indirectly involved, you know, and that's made my life that much more rich and full.
We should talk a little bit about how The Break became The Break, and it was all thanks to you. And probably a good year or so of us going back and forth. You know, I'd love to actually share with listeners a little bit about how this all came to be, because it is all because of you. I was doing an Instagram Live during the thick of the shutdown. Like, we had just shut down because of the pandemic. It wasn't even like going out and wearing masks. It was like nobody was leaving their houses. So I had to just keep myself busy. I was like losing my mind a little bit. So I did some horrendous Instagram Live one afternoon. And I remember this little, like, people can ask if they can join your Instagram Live. And this one person kept asking and asking. And I was like, oh, all right, I'll let this person jump on. It ended up being a 13-year-old kid, which was sweet, and also I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I gonna
How am I gonna interact with him or her?
Exactly. And it's, so it was cute and everything. We talked for a little while. He was a big fan of The Great Christmas Light Fight, but then I felt like, because he was 13, he didn't really understand, all right, it's time for you to time for you to go, you know. So anyways, Chappie was watching it, and he ended up telling me to call you. He said, a buddy of mine is starting a podcast network. Have you ever thought about doing it? And I'm like, Chappie, are you serious right now? Like, are you basing this off of what just happened? Like, off of that Instagram Live? I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea. And he's like, no. He's like, you should just give him a call. Just give him a call. And I said, oh, all right. So then you and I connected. And then you kept saying to me, you know, like, what is it you're interested in? What do you want to do? Like, what do you want to talk about? And at the time, I kept thinking, oh, I think I'm going to do something about the hospitality industry. And we went back and forth, and I came up with all of these awful names for podcasts, like Hospitality Unhinged. And
that's part of the creative process. It wasn't really.
Right. Thank you for your hospitality. We went through it all. But then you and I were chatting, and you had mentioned to me how a really great conversation starter is when you ask somebody how they got their big break. And it was like the lights turned on, and I said, yes, that's it.
I'm glad it worked out.
And I've learned, I've learned so much. I think it was like a free pass for me to be learning things from people, asking questions that I'm dying to know, but I have like a one-on-one conversation. And I mean, I think selfishly, I get more out of this podcast than probably
that's good.
Anyone else. Yeah, I love it.
You know, the other thing is, I learned that from a friend years and years ago. Not learned, he just told me, and I said, wow. And you know, you have to do it when you feel as though the time is right, like when you're in front of someone, and if the conversation's going the right way and all this kind of stuff. But what it does, I think, is it humanizes the other person, when, you know, say it's a job interview or a work related thing or what the ask is, but it humanizes them and it allows them to be more intimate and disarming with you. And they get more personal with you. You know, I applaud your success. This is incredible what you've built, but I love the break.
Yeah.
When did you risk it all? You know, like who gave you your first shot? You know, whether you went to the 66th bank to get that loan, you know, you mortgage your house, et cetera. At some point, someone said, go for it, you know, and that, you know, it's the road less traveled, right?
Or if you're in your closet in the fetal position, working as a bouncer, ready to go home to your mama.
That's it. And you never know when that's coming sometimes. And thank God it comes at the right time sometimes and at the right moment in your life that makes it most poignant.
So then how did this whole podcast world come to be for you? What got you interested in doing this?
We were 2 years old, April 1, right? So we built this during COVID, which I think is incredible and just a testament
incredible.
To you, our host, our entire team. I have a VC friend and we had an app a couple of years ago. I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole there. But at the end of the meeting, I said, what are you investing in? What's your sweet spot? And he said, podcasts. That's about 4 years ago. And about 2.8, just under 3 years ago, I started being asked to be on a lot of on guests on a lot of podcasts. What's it like to make a movie? How do you make a movie? What's it like to work with the movie stars? Where do you pick your locations? All that kind of everything movie related. And they kept, like within a month, I had at least 12 people call me. And I said, what's going on here? So I started doing a little more homework and due diligence. And I called a friend of ours, Mark Carey, who comes from 25 years of radio programming, a couple national awards, taking them all over the world. And then my film and TV partner. And we just started talking and doing some due diligence. You know, things continue to build and we're in the middle of a raise and we continue to build our shows and making them fruitful for all.
That's amazing. So what have you learned about the podcast industry in this last 2 years of starting this network?
It's still evolving. You know, I think it's still in its early stages, as we all know. And most folks don't understand that it's, you know, anyone can have a podcast, but it's typically a slow burn to gain an audience unless you're coming in as, you know, Kim Kardashian or Justin Bieber or Messi. But with enough, you know, perseverance in the right subject matter and the right folks that want to give it a shot and go for it, I think you build an audience and they will come.
And hopefully that's what's happening here. We're building our audience. We're growing.
Yeah, we're growing and it continues to, and it also helps complement you and amplify and multiply your work and your career, whether you're a corporation or an individual, to build that 360 and that moat around your business. You know, you're hosting a number of different shows, but to have a podcast aligned with that and then a few other different properties and IP, that helps build your brand and your value, which I think is key.
I'm so happy that you and I actually had a chance to like sit here and do this and pick your brain a little bit, not just about film, but about the journey and about your podcast world. But I'd be remiss to let you go if you do not tell me about this space debris cleanup situation that you're embarking on. What is this?
Yeah, so crypto and the blockchain is at the forefront of discussion today. We have a podcast.
Yes.
That is, it's steeped in hip hop, but educating the hip hop world on crypto and NFT and blockchain. A friend of mine, his name is Cody Willard. He's a hedge fund manager. He's been on CNBC. He used to have a show on CNBC. He's on Fox. He's on a lot of shows. He's a dear friend. And he called and said, I'm thinking about, I'm a aficionado of space. He said, what if we set up a nonprofit to help clean up space debris? And I said, So it's called SkyDles.
SkyDles.
Yeah, which is an acronym for Sky's the Limit. It drops May 6th.
I love that.
And we'll drop that May 6th. And there's only a certain amount of tokens that get bought. And the monies that are raised, piece of those will go help companies out there in the space and exploration, you know, like SpaceX or these other folks that are up there building startups and new companies that we would give monies to them to help clean up space.
Leave it to you.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave it to Cody. I'm just there to support and have some fun with it and learn the game. You know, it's still new.
Yeah.
So I'm learning a lot.
Would you ever go up in space?
I'd love to, as long as I can come back.
Yeah, that's always the question. We never know.
We have a podcast called Origins and Evolution. And the host is Dimitar Sesolov. He is the Origins of Life Director at Harvard. And he is studying and working with NASA to bring people to Mars. And he said, Chris, would you like to go to Mars? I said, I'd love to go to Mars. He said, it takes 9 years. I said, does it take 9 years to get back? He said, yes. I said, I don't think I'm going to go.
I'm so glad that you took the time to chat.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Anytime. We could talk for hours.
I know we can. And we always do this.
We should sit by the river one day and, you know.
Every time we talk, we're about to hang up. And then it's like we launch into a whole new conversation. But
thank you.
Thank you. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
The Break with Tanya Nayak, a Mudhouse Media production.